that's one of the things about religion that we have to remember when we're talking about that makes it such a hot topic issue is because we're talking about law. Who gets to be God? Who gets to be God's deputies? Who is the Most High? Who is the divine authority? It's all about the claim to the Most High. The only way that somebody can be higher than us is if we give away our power. Because there's nobody, we're all equal. But we're not equal in our knowledge, so ultimately, I think it does have to be a hierarchy, but it has to be a cooperative hierarchy, like a bee colony. It's about what our value system is, what we care about.
Reminder. All right. Hello, Hive Mind. Today is September 30th, 2021. I'm your host, Nate Kapp, and we are joined back with co-host Brandon Martin. Welcome to the 48th Cubbyhole Podcast, where important topics are unveiled, discussed, and tested. Our website is cubbyhole.com. That's CubbyHole.com. And you can also listen on Spotify, Apple, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, Amazon Music, and much more. Brandon, how you doing, buddy? Where have you been?
I'm doing what? Where have I been? Taking a little hiatus, and that has been very good for my well-being and my health.
Nice.
But yeah, I'm still alive. I'm still here, and it's very good to be back on the Cubbyhole Podcast and to be, you know, on here with you, and I'm really excited to get back to work with you.
Awesome, man. I'm really glad to hear that, and it's been a long time, and it's been crazy how many, or how long we haven't really shared the airways together, so I'm very excited for this, and today, Brandon and I are going to talk about allegorical movies, ones we are planning on breaking down here on the show in the near future. So we'll also talk about Brandon's new presentation later on in the show as well. And we will end this episode with a theory breakdown of the new Matrix 4 trilogy. So definitely stay tuned for that. Also, just a short recap of the last episode. I broke down ways in which we can understand allegory by knowing metaphorical vehicles and tenors, how to see, you know, literally and symbolically or allegorically. I also began to break down the symbolism of the first degree trestle board, aka the entered apprentice. And I ended that show at the foot of the ladder known as Jacob's Ladder. So make sure to catch the next shows where I'll be bringing more knowledge regarding those symbols, because we have to understand esoteric Freemasonry. So when understood, when Freemasonry is understood, we can be able to also see the deeper underlying messages in stories or movies, important ones, that is. It's about being able to see the hidden meaning, and being able to see this way can, you know, it can really help us see the hidden realm of reality, including the reality that is, you know, purposely hidden from us. A hidden reality veiled in basic trivial storytelling or media or history. So we have to take this type of sacred science serious if we wish to understand ourselves at a deep level. So definitely don't miss out on these shows regarding the science of allegory and Freemasonry, because it is essential to understanding morality and esotericism. Okay, so before we get into allegorical movies, we haven't heard from Brandon regarding the Seed 4 Growth Conference, which happened this past May. So it was a really, really awesome historical conference. And Brandon, I know you've wanted to get on here and talk about it for a while. So if you want, go ahead and give us a breakdown of those two awesome jam-packed May days.
Yeah, I'd be glad to give my opinion on how the conference turned out. You know, the conference was pretty much, it was hell to get the conference going because of the pandemic that was going on, and everything just kept, you know, I just kept hitting barriers, one barrier after another, for actually having it in person because of all the restrictions and the draconian lockdowns that were going on. And then they started to put more regulations in place, like trying to make everybody wear masks and limiting the ability to have a full capacity of seats for the audience, cutting it in half. And they still wanted me to pay full price. So, you know, it was really hellish to actually get the conference off the ground. And it took a few years to get it moving. So it was really, really nice to actually have it come through and be successful. Even though it was only online, I still feel that it was one of the best conferences that I've ever seen. I don't think there's ever been that kind of work all put together in one place at one time, like that quality of work. Everybody built off of each other. Everybody had something to bring to the table. It literally was like the round table, you know.
Right.
They were all great minds. All the speakers were wonderful. They all brought great, great knowledge to the table. You know, you don't have to agree with everything that everybody said, but it all added to the whole tapestry of the Seed Conference. And, you know, for me personally, I served the Seed Conference on my own, free of charge, out of my home. And it was really the initiation of my path into the great work. You know, I got inspired by the Free Your Mind Conference, and I really wanted to get people, especially Nate and Doug, involved with it and to see some of their work, because I knew they had great things to say, you know, really early on in our, you know, great work period, you could say. And it just turned out amazingly after, you know, I started to do that. Each conference got better and better. The quality got better. I mean, the first conference was kind of hell too, because when we first did it, it was in spring, and we had this winter storm come out of nowhere, right? And it was freezing. It was so cold, and we were up in this barn, and we had to seal it all off. And everybody stuck through it, which was really awesome to see the amount of people that showed up and all the people that just had to resolve to sit there in the freezing cold weather to listen to hours and hours of all this great knowledge and, you know, occulted information. And it just shows that there are some people who are willing to, you know, learn in the most horrible environments. You know, I think a lot of people, they have this idea that you have to be super comfortable to learn. And yeah, that's great. You know, that really does increase your ability to learn, as being in a conducive environment for that. But also sometimes, like, to show that you have the willpower to sit through something like that, you know, to endure the hardship of environmental situations or conditions, to actually learn that, it just shows how much resolve you have. And I really, you know, I think that is an amazing thing. So yeah, Seed for Growth was just all around very successful. I mean, we had a few technical issues. I had some dilemmas with internet issues, which kind of was foreseen a little bit because I live out in a rural area. So I was very happy and thankful to have Nate, yourself, and Doug to take up the hosting part and take up the Q&A part. And you know, that really did affect me emotionally, not being able to be there online with everybody. I really felt, you know, bad about that, because I wanted to be there. It was my conference. I, you know, I'm the curator, I'm the founder of that. And so that hit me in my heart a little bit. But to see how good it was and how good it turned out, even though it was our first, you know, online event, none of us have ever done anything like that. We had a great team supporting us from Autonomy, you know, a great support team, great tech team. Mark Passio's help getting it on the One Great Work Network site and on Twitch and things like that was amazing. So, and just all the speakers, like I said, all the speakers that had so much great information to bring to the table. All the presentations came out very, very good. So yeah, I think it was one of the best conferences I've ever seen. And I can say that with, you know, somewhat of an experience of being through a lot of conferences.
I concur with that.
Not, Yeah, right. I mean, I don't think anybody could argue that. And, you know, I can't wait to put on the next one. I mean, I already got the name for it. I already got the title, Seed 5 Bloom.
Awesome.
You know, we're going to go into the next stage of, you know, growth. So we're going to take it to bloom.
Nice.
And I'm not in any kind of preparation for that at this point, but I hope to get that moving by the beginning of the year and hopefully to see it within a couple months after I get it moving. So sometime next year, people should be definitely keeping their ears open and their eyes open for the next seed event. And it's going to be even better because we're going to have, you know, all the experience that we've had. So
right.
We learned a lot. We all got our feet wet with being able to live host. And yeah, I just think it was amazing. And I thank everybody for, you know, all their effort for coming and participating, watching and supporting us.
Man, you know, I know you've put together the other seed conferences, 1, 2, and 3 prior to this one, but I knew going into this conference was going to be so much more because, you know, the other conferences only had like a handful of people to present and they were all really fantastic, but this was like, this was beyond anything else prior to the Seed conference or the Seed 4 conference. And what I want to know is, you know, what was going through your mind right before this, you know, like at the beginning of the day on, I think it was Friday, what was going through your mind right before you were about to, you know, introduce the whole conference and, you know, introduce the very first presenter?
Well, the main thing that was going through my mind was getting my presentation together.
Yep. I remember that.
Because, I was a little bit late with organization and, you know, getting everything crammed together. And I think the organization of the event was pretty decent for our first online event, but it could have been better, you know. And I definitely wasn't prepared with my presentation, which was a rush job. And I did the best I could in that time period. And it ended up being way longer than I expected it to be. So I was supposed to only have an hour and a half. That's what I had allocated to myself, you know, and given to myself. And then it ended up being 3 hours long. And I was like, oh, well, I guess we're just going to have to deal with that. And we learned to navigate the waters, you know, because we did have one speaker drop out, which was Tony Palmentera. And, you know, so that did help with that. And then some people's presentations were a little bit longer. Some people's presentations were a little bit less than what they said it was going to be. So it all worked out in the end. But the other things that were going through my mind was just how excited I was to have brought together so many enlightened beings at that time period. And, you know, I picked May specifically because of the dark ritualistic sacrifices that tend to go on during May, right? You know, like May Day being a dark occult ritual during the season of sacrifice. And, you know, I picked that time period because I wanted to counteract that energy with something very positive and very hard hitting for people. And it was really nice. You know, the next day I went around to all my local friend's house in the local area, and they were all, you know, still watching it, you know, watching the reruns of it. So it was really awesome to see that they were still engaged in it, and to see so many people that I knew personally, you know, being excited about that, because, you know, that's always something that hits me hard, is not seeing enough of my personal circle engage in the work that I feel is very important and very crucial, right? Everybody's distracted. Everybody's locked in emotional mind control. They just want entertainment. But it's nice to see some of that support come around in the end. The other thing that I was thinking about was, you know, just how to navigate any issues that would arise, right? So anything that I could think of in my head, I was just trying to prep myself. Like, oh, this could happen. and I was trying to make sure that I had all my areas covered, which I think is very important that we do things like that. So I was taking a very pragmatic approach to it and just making sure, like, hey, if something happens on my end, you know, who's going to take that up on the other side? And that's why I went ahead and hired, hired a team, you know, we hired a team, me and you, Nate, to actually make sure that the presentations were going to be aired smoothly so that there was no interruption. And I think that's the best way to do it, because if you're doing it from home, there's just so many issues that could happen, so many unforeseen events that could happen. And, you know, the most prevalent event that could happen is government trying to censor you and government trying to shut you off, which happened to us during one of the presentations on Facebook. I think YouTube gave us a strike as well. I think it got shut off there for a moment, but we did get it back up after that presentation was done. So, yeah, I mean, government's iron fist comes down. And they want to censor and shut you up, right? And they don't want you to speak the truth. You know, they don't want that to get out to a wide audience. So I think that's very important to know is just how to navigate those issues when they arise from a technical standpoint. And make sure that you have backup plans. You know, backups are the key. Not only backup your data, but whenever you're planning an event, you know, things are going to go wrong and you just got to continue to go through that. You know, you have to push through those barriers, push through those issues and make sure that you are you really have the resolve to make sure to get to the other side. You know, that's something that martial arts and skateboarding taught me, which is, you know, anytime that you happen to fall, you get back up and you try it again. I mean, right. I can't even tell you how many times, you know, to go and learn a trick on a skateboard, I've fallen over and over and over hundreds of times just to get one trick, just to make one landing, you know, and then the next thing you know, next week I can land that trick like every time. Right. So a lot of people have that fear psychology and they get scared about failure, not realizing that failure is part of the journey. It's part of how you grow. It's part of how you learn. And there is no life without some modicum, you know, experience of failure in your life. You have to go through that and you have to endure that pain and you have to have the psychology. You have to have strong psychological state, the mentality that you can get back up and try it again. You know, I mean, when I used to skate, I'd almost overexert myself doing that, you know, like my dad would have to stop me because I would just keep doing it to the point that I was like, I could barely even stand. My muscles were trembling and my legs are shaking and, you know, my whole body is just ready to collapse. Feels like I got hit by a train or something. And I still want to just keep trying and trying and trying. And sometimes you do just have to back off and, you know, say, okay, I'm going to do it again the next day. And, you know, after you do that, you eventually do land what you're trying to do. And I think that's how the Seed Conference kind of came about was, you know, learn from doing the first three events, which was, you know, right out of my own home. And each time it got better, each time the presentations got more clear, each time the speakers expanded, you know, each time the guests, there was more guests, the technical issues tend to be minimalized. And it seemed like the universe helped us in that area too, because the environmental conditions tended to, you know, be a lot better.
Right.
So, yeah, I think that's a very good lesson to learn.
Yeah, I definitely was, you know, I'm not a Johnny on the spot type of guy. And I definitely have a lot of fear in public speaking. But, you know, you not being able to be on there and then Doug and I having to take over really... Definitely. I was fearful. I'll admit, because I mean, I am, and that's my condition, but I did it and I'm glad that I did it because I got that experience and I'm very thankful for that experience. And, you know, it's definitely teaching me to be more prepared and knowing that, hey, you know, like you said, we're going to fail and we just got to keep on getting up and trying again until we get better and better and better. And that's, you know, one of the reasons I wanted to even start this Cubbyhole podcast, because I knew that I would get better at public speaking if I would, you know, go through this type of information. I would even understand the information even better. So it has really helped me grow as a person and as a speaker. And also it really made me appreciate what you were doing. And, you know, I'm really just so stoked for you for putting so much effort into creating, into generating such a solid conference. You know, it was so, so inspiring. And, you know, I'm hoping it gets more people to step up and put more of these types of shows together, because it's really, really much needed. And if we're going to see a bigger and more positive changes, that's what we got to do. So really great job, Brandon. You know, I'm really proud of you as a brother and as family and as one of my greatest friends. So, you know, it's so cool what you did, and I'm really, really excited to you know, see what you put together next, and I'm excited to be part of that again. So,
well, thank you very much, Nate. It's an honor to be family member and friend to you as well, and to be part of this community. I think that's something that we all should think about, is to be very positive about being around people that have the same mindset, you know, because if you're around rotted fruits, then you might rot yourself, obviously. So to have that many great minds, like I said, come together, and the Q&A was on point. You know, I tried so hard to get into the Q&A. My video was working, but for some reason my mic wasn't working and I could not figure it out. I get real irritated about it. But, you know, I thought the Q&A was amazing. It was like a druid circle, you know, just all kinds of very enlightened people. And a lot of people are young, you know. It's very impressive to see how many younger individuals that were, you know, that are that far along the path. It's very positive. Now, I'm not trying to paint some romantic picture of the world. I'm not saying the world's awakened to that level, but there are a few people, you know. I think we're worse off, honestly, in the world than we have been in the past 10 years. But, you know, I also have to give credit where it's due and understand that there are people who do know this knowledge and who are putting in the work, especially within the One Great Work community. So yeah, I think that's a very positive thing.
Yeah, man. And also, if anyone didn't catch, anyone listening to this show right now, if you didn't catch the conference, you can go on the homepage of the Cubbyhole website and you'll see all the presentations as you scroll down, and they're all there. So definitely check those out, and you will find so much vital information that is all about finding our sovereignty and ending slavery. So,
yeah, I was actually going to say that a second ago, that people should, you know, get on there and check out the presentations if they haven't caught it. And there will be something there for everybody. You know, whatever level you're at, from absolute, you know, basics, beginner, newbie, initiate, you know, to the advanced student, all the way up to the most advanced student, I would say. So that's something I really did enjoy about the conference, is that we had a full spectrum of information going from the foundational essence of the principles that we need to understand, all the way up to the more advanced psychology and ideologies that we need to really develop and to flush out, right? Deep history, deep occulted history, to, you know, deep occulted psychological aspects of ourselves. So yeah, I think that there was something in there for everybody, from one extreme to the other. And a little bit in between. So that was something I really enjoyed about the conference as well.
Yeah, man. I'm really, really looking forward to what's going to come next. And, you know, more than anything, I'm just really looking forward to more people waking up. And I mean, I guess I'm not really expecting that. So I guess I can't say I'm looking forward to it, but I'm really hoping that more people take this work serious and become more, you know, because there's a lot of people out there that maybe are waking up to what's going on, and they really need to recognize that there are places that we can come together and actually, you know, work together to shed these bars that are built in our minds. And it really is going to take lots of care and heart and dedication and being tenacious to really, you know, make a big difference, a big positive difference that's going to, you know, help us, like I said earlier, become more sovereign and get closer to our true sovereignty. But what I really want to say is, you know, people like, you know, Mark Passio, yourself, Brandon Martin, and all the others who are putting together these conferences, there's very few. There's only, you know, like a handful, maybe at the most, sadly, that I know of anyway. And there really needs to be more people stepping up and putting these types of events together. And, you know, I'm also talking to myself, because I know that it is so important that each one of us puts in that time and effort. And, you know, I can't do everything. I'm putting together this show to help these conferences. And, you know, I mean, that's part of the reason. And, you know, to get the word out there. But, you know, we just got to give everything we got if we truly want to see things get better in this world. If we truly want to see freedom, if we really want to see more people knowledgeable about the things that truly matter, like natural law. And I'm really just trying my hardest to, you know, get this type of information out there and, you know, let people know that, you know, they're not alone. And, you know, there's just so much that we gotta be grateful for, that people like yourself and others alike who have busted their ass to get this type of information out.
Well, it does take a lot of work. One thing is that, you know, when you're trying to present or host, you know, a podcast, present a presentation, or do a video cast, whatever it might be, and then also try to organize a conference on top of that, that's a lot of work. And it tends to be, you know, very frightening for a lot of people, because, you know, it is a lot to chew. And that's why you do need help. You do need other people to come in and help you in right. this. If it wasn't for the people that were helping me, I could never have got that together. I mean, I could have hosted one conference, you know, on my own. But if I didn't have any speakers to come, it just would have been me, and it just, you know, it wouldn't have been quite successful in the ways that they should be, right? Because we're trying to be tactical, we're trying to be strategic, we're trying to really get to a wider audience, because obviously we're in an information war, a consciousness war, and because of that, you know, we have to take it seriously at some level. I mean, you don't even know how many times I've wanted to give up on doing some of this stuff, because I just don't see enough people, you know, working. I don't see enough people actually doing the work. And I always come back to the same answer within my own head. It's like, well, then if I stop, then I'm just one of those, you know, people. And then there's less people doing that work. And then I would be mad at myself for doing that. And I wouldn't be, you know, a good person for doing that. Because if you know this stuff and you don't say anything or you don't do anything with it, then, you know, you're a very bad person for being in that position, you know, because you're harming people. You're harming the world by doing that, because there's just information out there, you know, so much garbage that's being fed to our children, our family members, our friends, just our species in general, that is really corrupting everybody's belief systems, everybody's, you know, programs that they have running in their mind. It's like a giant virus. That's the real virus, right? The real virus is corrupting people's ability to discern reality from illusion, to corrupt people into believing that there is legitimacy in man's law, that man can be the lawmaker. You know, anybody who thinks that man can be the lawmaker, even if they like at some level know that government is corrupt. Like, I know people that know that government is corrupt, but still they believe that man can arbitrate laws, you know? And it's like, you do realize that this is the root of the issue, is that you believe in man's authority, that you can supersede the laws of nature, you know, or God's laws, however you want to put it. And this is what creates systems like government. I mean, government is just the effect, just the symptom of, you know, our minds and what we're doing with our minds, right? So the causality always starts in the mind. And this is one of the major problems, is people actually believe that they can be the arbiters of what is right and wrong and what gets to be law. And until people get out of that mindset, then, you know, we're not making any headway, and we're not going to change anything. You know, we're not going to really change that much. I don't know how many people have come to me and they're like, well, this law is okay, that law is okay, blah, blah, blah. This is, you know, this has helped me in some situation. And I'm just like, you still don't get it. You know, you still don't get it. Like, everything that you use in the system legally justifies the system itself. You know, right. Like if I win a court case for a Second Amendment case or something like that, right? Yeah, that's great. I'm not saying that's a bad thing, but I am saying that holistically it is a bad thing, because it justifies the system of law.
Right.
It justifies that man can be the arbiters of law. And it not really, you know, it's not really justifying it, but it makes it seem like it's just. It makes it seem ostensibly like it is, you know, a real thing. So that's the thing. Like, that's why I'm not for like battling these things in the courtroom or anything like that, because every win you have there just makes it seem to the average person that somehow government is still legitimate and it can be used positively, you know? And it can't. It cannot be holistically. Yeah, you might get a little win here and there, but it's not going to change anything. Actually, it makes the problem worse. It makes it, you know, in the long run, works against our overall, you know, what we want done, what we want to see in the world, which is true freedom, right?
Right.
So it actually, you know, is counterproductive to our whole goal of trying to get freedom, because all it does is it makes it seem like government is somehow legitimate and that it should stay in place. And as long as we change it to meet our, you know, personal wants for the better, right, then it should stay in place. And this is absolutely ridiculous. It's absolutely nonsensical, illogical, unreasonable. It's erroneous. It's dogmatic. It just doesn't stand. And, you know, that grinds my gears every time I hear people talk about it like that. You know, same. Minarchists, libertarians, even some anarchists that I know. And I'm like, yeah, not even...
Are they really anarchists then?
What is it?
I said, can you really consider them an anarchist then?
No, not really.
Yeah. But no. Yeah, I mean, the belief in man's authority is by far the most dangerous belief that anybody can have. And I completely agree with you. And it is the very reason that we're in such a hairy, nasty situation that we're in right now.
Well, yeah, I mean, think about it this way, Nate, right? Or the audience as well. Say you're in a abusive relationship, right? And this, you're a female and you have a very strong, dominant, you know, abusive boyfriend, right? Or husband. And he beats you every Friday, you know, or once a month or once a week, whatever it is, right? And he beats you. And he beats you to a bloody pulp, right? I mean, he beats you. Hell, he even locks you in a little cage in the house, pretty much. You know, you can't go out. You can't see your friends. You can't use the phone, anything like that, right? Just absolutely vicious abuse. And then on the other days, he comes out and he's like, hey, let's go out to eat with our friends today. You know, let's go have a good time. Let's go see a movie. Let's, you know, let's do this. And he's very kind and very polite and very nice, you know. Well, every time you continue to stay in that cycle, you know, not only is it your fault that you're continually getting abused, you know, at some level, that you, that doesn't mean that it's just that he's doing whatever he's doing. It just means that you're choosing to stay in that relationship. And you know, there's certain situations where it's really, really difficult to get out of those relationships. But my point is that, you know, as long as you continue to do that, you start to reinforce the idea that somehow this person can be good. Somehow this person, even though he does all this horrible stuff, you know, breaks my nose, breaks, you know, my feet, my ankles, whatever it might be, right? Breaks my arm, breaks a cheekbone, right? Every time that you're like, oh, well, he did this really awesome thing on this day. You know, he got me this for my birthday. Oh, the week after he, you know, he did this very special romantic thing for me on this day. Well, all you're doing is prolonging the inevitable of suffering, you know? It's just more and more suffering. You're just perpetuating the experience of suffering because you're not willing to get up and get out of that. And then at some level, you start to identify with that abuse because that's an abuse victim cycle. And it's kind of like a Pavlovian conditioning, right? Where you actually start to enjoy it. Because at some level you're masochistic and you start to, maybe you're conditioned to be masochistic, right? By being in that abusive relationship, you start to expect it. And at some level, maybe you feel that you deserve to be abused at that level, right? Because I know all kinds of people that are in that situation. They're like, I think I deserve to be beat by my woman or my man. Well, I think a lot of people have that kind of same mentality about government. We deserve to be punished by government and by order followers. Like, they might not come right out and say it, you know? But I mean, what else can you say when you're in such a perpetual state of Stockholm syndrome, right? And you're so masochistic at such a collective level, you know? At some level, you are participating, condoning, and advocating for that. And then at some level, you think you deserve this stuff. You start to really believe, oh, I went and talked to my friend for 3 hours this day, or went out to lunch with them, and my boyfriend got mad at me, and he beat me bloody because of that. Well, I deserve that, right? I deserve that. And that's how they condition you. You know, that's how we condition animals a lot of times. And it's just horrible to see. It's just absolutely, you know, deplorable. And it's no way to live. It's not healthy. It's not sane. It's not just. It's not ethical, you know. And it's not going to get you any place besides the same thing that you're getting, which is more negativity, more abuse, more suffering. And for people who are supporting the system of slavery as a metaphor in place of the abusive boyfriend or girlfriend, well, we're going to get more slavery, you know, at a collective level, because we refuse to say the lost word no, and then act upon that as well, you know.
Right.
And that action has to come in many different ways. It just can't come from one way, because this is something I wanted to tell you, Nate, is that the war that we're in is a very sophisticated one, right? It's not like any other war we've ever experienced before in human history. A lot of it's the same, you know. A lot of the techniques that they're using are the same, psychological warfare, that is. But the means for which they're getting these things done have advanced. You know, technology is at such a level that it's almost merging with humanity, where we're pretty much becoming transhumanistic in a dark way at a certain level, right? I mean, think about it. Everybody has their phones with them. They got their computers. I mean, what we're doing right now, we're using the internet. We're using this. And you can use these things for positive uses. And that's what we're trying to advocate for, is to use the tools that you have for positive uses, right? But on the other hand, you know, that means the warfare, the game of warfare, the game of war is more sophisticated because of these things. And if you don't know how your tools work, or you don't know how your enemy's tools work, then you are at a huge disadvantage. And that's why you need to learn tech skills. That's why first you got to start with the principles, right? You have to get all the principles in order when it comes to natural law. You got to get your psyche right. You got to face the shadow self. You got to do the internal work. And then you got to start learning how to deal with the external world and how to, you know, do what you want to do with the knowledge that you have. And I mean, that's the big thing, is that we need the knowledge before we can go do that stuff. And I think people are just, this is what I like to say. You know, a lot of them are golems and a lot of them are troglodytes, right? Just freaking troglodytes. That's the word for it, you know?
There you go.
And it's really horrible to see that. But a lot of people don't have the tech skills to be able to do the work that we do. Hell, I didn't have the tech skills. You know, I just put myself out there and just started doing it. And then I learned it.
Same.
Trial and error. You know, I just kept working with these things. I mean, every time that we go to record a show, there's something that comes up, a minor tech issue, and you just got to deal with it on hand, just like the conference. So I think that's really important for people to get in their heads, is like, you need to be able to navigate the world that you're living in, the system that you're living in. It's one thing to say, oh, I know these things are going on. It's another thing to be able to operate in those things and try to change it, you know? And that doesn't mean go join up with the government and trying to change it from the inside. You got to change it from a fundamental level of principles and getting your philosophy straight.
Right.
And your actions from that, right? The way you behave, your behavior. So I think that's very important for people to know, because there's so many people I know that are like, well, I can never do the things that you do because, you know, I don't know how to use a computer. And I'm like, it's 2021 and you don't know how to use a fucking computer, you know? Like, seriously.
Yeah, it's the idea that if whenever you say I can't, well, there you go. You've already been defeated. So, and you haven't even started. So,
right.
Yeah, I agree with your analogy of, you know, the husband or boyfriend beating the girl to a pulp. I'm not laughing because she got beat to a pulp, but
right.
But the thing is yes, it's just like I see people being cheated on, and then I'll say, and then they'll turn around and say, like, you know, you got to do what government says and we need government and all this stuff. And I'm like, wait a minute. So, you know, I know, you know, that the government lies all the time, and you have seen them firsthand lie to you, but you still keep coming back. But you didn't come back to your partner who cheated on you, right? Or, you know, your ex-partner, you didn't come back to them, did you? Well, then why are you coming back to government all the time? Well, that's because most people don't understand that they have mommy and daddy issues. They don't realize that they need mommy and they need daddy still. They haven't grown up to an adult yet to where they can self-sustain, or to where they can, you know, live without someone else thinking for them and doing things for them. It's a very, you know, psychological war, a very large psychological war that we're in, and people just are in denial. They have the cognitive dissonance going on. So I completely agree with what you're saying, and yeah, it's crazy. Even people who start to wake up to what's going on, they'll, you know, pull a, you know, a matrix cipher and go right back to sleep. And it's just like, man, I don't know how you can do that. I don't know how you can learn so much of this information, get the principles, and, you know the truth to a high degree, and then go right back to sleep. It's just, it blows my mind that can even happen, but I guess it can, because I've witnessed it. But we're going to switch gears now.
Well, hedonism is a hell of a drug.
Oh yeah, I would say so. I don't think I've ever really quite experienced that, but yeah, I think it is. I think maybe I've experienced it on very low degrees, but I quickly realized that I was becoming a degenerate and needed to grow up and, you know, become the adult that I'm supposed to be, become the change that I'm supposed to be. So anyway, we're going to switch gears now. And, I said Brandon and I were going to break down the Matrix, but, you know, on the last shows, but he said he's too good for that. So we're not going to do that here. No, I'm kidding. But he decided that he's going to be making a presentation out of what he has so far, which is really cool, and I'm looking forward to it. So instead of breaking it down today on this show, we plan on having him come break it down with me in the future shows after he has given that presentation. So Brandon, what I want to know is, what inspired you to go forward and make a presentation out of our show, before our show comes out, of the Matrix trilogy?
Well, Deciphered. We were talking about doing allegories, right? And it's something that we both have been extremely excited to get into. You know, with myself, I have been a very dedicated, you know, symbolist and a person who loves to dive into mythologies and folklore and, you know, deep philosophies within storytelling, right? It's always been something since I was a kid that I loved. I just love getting deep into the characters and the story and how they develop and, you know, whatever I can learn from that. And then learning what an allegory was very, you know, much inspired me to start to look at it and relate it back to my own world and what's going on in the current world and what I could learn from all these things, you know? So if it wasn't for like all the books I read as a kid or all the movies that I used to dedicate myself to watch over and over to find, you know, so-called Easter eggs, the occulted knowledge within them, the hidden meanings, it was very thrilling to get into that, you know? And this is leading up to why I, you know, chose to do the Matrix allegory. But, you know, we were talking about, you know, what movies to do. And then I came up with the idea of doing the Matrix because, you know, we got the new Matrix coming out in December, and the Matrix was so revolutionary to my state of mind when I was younger and to everybody that I know, right? Everybody got something from it. Maybe not exactly what I'll be bringing to the table or what like you would bring to the table or what Mark has talked about and others have talked about, but everybody definitely felt the impact of that movie. And I felt, you know, this is a perfect time, you know, to do a Matrix, you know, breakdown, an allegorical breakdown of the Matrix. And my original idea and our idea was to come on and just, you know, present, you know, a quality breakdown on the show. And then as I started to get my material together, you know, first I started to write an article about it. And then from that, first I started taking notes and then it turned into an article. And then from there, I started making slides. And then when the slides started coming together, I started looking at them and I was like, this is going to be kind of difficult to do on a podcast. I mean, it can be done. It's just going to be kind of difficult and it's going to be very long. So the way that the slides came together, it just kind of grew into something else and it grew into a presentation just, you know, with the style that I tend to make things in. It wasn't really like just reference slides. It was more of a, you know, chronological, very strategic and well-built presentation. So I decided, you know, I'd rather go in the presentation format because I think the quality will be there and it won't you know, I want to make sure that if I'm going to do this, I'm going to do it to the best of my ability and make sure that it's something that's going to, you know, stand the test of time, you could say. And I know that Mark did a wonderful breakdown of the Matrix, you know, back at, I think at Free Your Mind 2, he did.
Right.
I believe that was the one that he presented at Free Your Mind 2. And the quality of that video is just a little shoddy, right? Nothing wrong with the quality of the information. It's amazing. Slides are, you know, high resolution, but the video quality is just, it's not, you know, up to what we would consider to be what we want as our standard for today. So I felt, okay, well, I'll take that idea that he had laid out and I'll build upon that. You know, I'll add in all the things that I think are crucial, all the hidden points, and, you know, I'll try to, in a way, remaster that, but not literally remastering his video, but just kind of build upon that or remake it in my own, with my own ideas and things like that. And that's what I tend to do. You know, I take from all these other places and all these other sources, and then I tend to build upon them, right? We all do that. Right. And since Mark was such an influential individual in my life, you know, I do tend to respect a lot of his work. So yeah, I was like, okay, so it'd be nice to have a presentation that's high quality, up to date, especially right now, that's like that Mark Passio presentation, but, you know, for today, right? So for today. And I think that would be really amazing, not just an audio podcast presentation, but also a live video, not live, but a video presentation of that. So that's where it kind of like went in my head. And so far, it's coming together really well. I just finished the first movie, so I'm one part in. I'm going to do all three of the movies, and it'll be all in one recording. It won't be parted out or anything. And yeah, there's going to be something in there that a lot of people have never seen before.
Yeah, I was just going to ask.
It's not an identical remake of Mark's, obviously. There's a lot of stuff in there that I added. You know, because I have a lot of knowledge in cinematography, a lot of knowledge in cinema language and cinema technique. So I'm adding some of that stuff in there. And then all the occult knowledge and esoteric knowledge is coming out into the forefront because of my, you know, because I have the eyes to see, you could say my third eye is on.
Well, I'm glad that you didn't fully bail on me. Because I have some stuff to bring to the table when you come on the show and break it down, and I'm really looking forward to that. So, but yeah, man, I saw a couple of your slides so far, and it's going to be a really awesome, powerful presentation. So, can't wait to see it.
Yeah, I'm excited to come on here and talk to you about it as well, and that kind of leads us into that next category, which is like where we want to go with breaking down allegories in films, you know. And I have quite a few films that I like to break down, considering that I'm actually working on a book. It's been slow going here lately, but I have been working on a book about, you know, esoteric knowledge in cinema for a while. And it's kind of like a collection of all my essays about me breaking down movies.
Cool.
So, you know, to start out with, I think we should break down Alien 1 and 2, which is Aliens. It's not Alien 2, but it's...
I got to rewatch those.
Yeah, they're so good. And I just wrote an article about that over the winter. And, you know, I think one of the other great workers did a really good video of it as well. Chris Janston, is that his name? Chris
something? Jansen.
Yeah. He did a really good job. And it's weird because when I saw his, I had already been working on my article for that. And like everything that he was talking about was like in my article. And I was like, oh, wow, this guy knows his stuff. And, you know, he was talking about the evil within and just the way he broke down the allegory of it was really sound and really well done. So, you know, it really inspired me to go even further into it. So I think that would be a good series to cover, you know, so it, I think with this section of the podcast here, Nate, I'll throw one out there, you throw another until we get sick of throwing movies out that we don't want to, you know, well, that we want to. That we want to cover is what I was saying. So
for sure. Yeah. I mean, I would definitely be willing because I haven't seen Alien 1, 2, or 3, or I don't even know how many there are, but I haven't seen them since I was, since they first came out when I was a kid. So I will definitely be rewatching those if you plan on breaking them down on the show. And also, I made a short list of movies and series shows that I'd like to break down, you know, also with you if you'd like, or, you know, ones I can just break down on my own. Either way, it'll be really cool. The Twilight Zone episode of Nightmare at 20,000 Feet, that is like one of the greatest allegories ever. And I think it'll be really cool, and it's not that long either, so I'm gonna do my best to break that down on the show, and you're more than welcome to come on and give your take on it too. But also The Platform, Snowpiercer, and believe it or not, The Longest Yard with Adam Sandler.
that kind of came out of nowhere. That's interesting.
It's always been my favorite movie and people make fun of me for it. But, you know, as when I was a kid, I grew up loving football, and, you know, it's a great story based on the old Longest Yard with, what's his name? But yeah, I can't remember, but it's based on the old Longest Yard, both of them amazing movies to me. But the newer one with Chris Rock and Adam Sandler is really, really awesome. And I loved the movie until I started to get into this work and started realizing, you know, government, you know, what government truly means, and realizing what slavery truly means, and then realizing, you know, what an allegory is. And then I started to really see how this movie was a direct reflection of the condition of humanity right now. And so I'm really looking forward to breaking that down. And it's funny because it's, you know, it's one of those movies where you're like, yeah, it's kind of like, what's that movie with Tom Hanks, the Money Pit?
Oh, right. Yeah.
You wouldn't know that it's an allegory unless you understood Freemasonry. And, you know, and that's why it's both of those movies are really great. And I mean, I in my opinion, but I'm really looking forward to those. And I also planning on breaking down things like the Masonic allegory of marriage, which, you know, that goes hand in hand with the Money Pit, the devil allegory, classic alien invasion allegory. And a lot of people are gonna be like, oh, you're gonna talk about aliens, you know, UFOs, like, what are you, some kind of Sitchinite? But I understand that there is a allegory in the classic alien invasion and what aliens are, so definitely look out for that one. Also, there's a racing allegory, you know, first, second, and third place. Plato's cave allegory, most people know that one. The mansion allegory, zombie allegory, most people can figure that one out too. The Darwinian evolution theory allegory, I'm excited to talk about that one. Robots allegory, and maybe a few more of those types of allegories. And these breakdowns that I'll do they'll be really short, so I could probably do them all in maybe one or two shows. But these are what I feel to be extremely important allegories to understand, because they're closer to home, so to speak. They're allegories that go beyond the story. They kind of, you know, they're kind of in our actual reality, or they've become our actual reality. And I think those are very interesting types of allegories that go on constantly. So I'm really looking forward to breaking those down, and you're more than welcome to come on and give your take, because I'm pretty sure you'll have a lot to bring to the table for any of those. So.
Yeah, I like the idea of taking foundational allegories that are kind of universally used as memes or archetypes,
right,
for stories, you know, like what you're talking about, like more simple allegories, like the robot allegory, you know, like that is really important to break down the simplicity of it. And then once that's broken down, then you can see it in all these different, you know, movies and you know, stories. I'm very interested in doing Twilight Zone. I had Twilight Zone on my list, specifically two episodes. I had already started working on these two episodes, so I would like to do I Shot an Arrow into the Air, which is a really good one, and it has a great allegory about the triune aspects of the brain in it with each character. It also has a lot of, you know, storytelling importance about self-defense and gun ownership. So it's a really good, really good episode. And then the other one is The Monsters Are Due on Maple Street, which I feel is an amazing allegory about hysteria, groupthink, fear psychology. I think that one is a really good one, especially in our time, you know, right now, in our current times. You know, definitely would love to come on and do the Twilight Zone with you. A couple of the other, you know, ideas that I had. Obviously, I want to do Equilibrium.
Yeah.
That one would be good for the Masonic allegory within it. The symbolism in that is just amazingly profound, right in your face. And, you know, the Brave New World overtones of it are right in your face as well. And
yeah,
you know,
Brave New World is another one for sure.
Right. Yeah. I mean, we could do books too. I mean, eventually, that would be really, really nice to see. I have a few that I would really like to do. Obviously, I'm going to do The Matrix, so we're going to do that. Equilibrium. You already said The Platform. That was on my list. The Platform is something I feel we should definitely do. I was thinking about doing The Shining as well. I think The Shining would be a good allegory to do. And I know a lot of people have done The Shining, but maybe not from the perspective that we come from. Another one that I wanted to do is Eyes Wide Shut. And I know a lot of people have really covered that to, you know, to the end. Right. But I have a pretty good article written about that I haven't published yet. I figured I would do that because that one's a really, really good one. And in conjunction with that, I thought about trying to cover, it's a TV show. It's called Strange Angel. It's about Thelema. It's about the occult. And it has a really good allegory in it. Unfortunately, they didn't finish it. It only had two seasons, but that makes it a little bit easier to break down without, you know, getting too deep into it, because I tend to be very detailed when it comes to things like that.
Yeah.
There's a couple episodes of Star Trek, actually, I'd like to cover. And I know a lot of people would be like, oh, you're a Trekkie or something like that. Well, there's a few really good allegories in Star Trek,
For sure.
Specifically the Next Generation, right? And there's a lot of occult knowledge in it. There's a lot of stuff about tarot. There's a lot of stuff about mysticism. And there's a lot of stuff about, you know, current affairs and political issues and moral issues, ethical dilemmas. So I think that, I wanted to cover a couple episodes of Star Trek. I mean, I don't want to make the list too big,
Yeah, we're going to have 100 episodes of allegories before we get back to the content.
Another thing I was going to say, we don't have to cover these back to back. We could just, you know, cover these throughout the entire lifespan of the podcast, right?
Right. Yeah. I was even thinking that just now, how it would be really cool to maybe do a allegory every, you know, 5 to 10 episodes or something, just to give like a nice little breakup.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea, you know.
And maybe the allegories actually go with what the sciences that we're sharing are.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. That's what I'm mainly looking for, is whatever we're talking about and whatever we've laid out. You know, if I'm going to bring in an allegory, it's going to relate to the knowledge that we've already brought to the table at some level, right?
Right.
So that's really important. So that's why the Matrix, like, that's one of the things that I wanted to bring to the table, was because, you know, I know we've had a lot of prerequisites to understand, you know, the Matrix. So a lot of it's already laid out that you need, the tools that you need to be able to decode it or decipher it, right?
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, there's a few others, but you already said a couple that I wanted to do, and I'd be interested in coming on and doing them with you. Snowpiercer is definitely one of them. The platform, like you said, definitely one of them. Twilight Zone, absolutely. So, yeah, I mean, we don't want to spoil everything. I think those are great. That's a great place to start.
You know, I have
to start
for sure. I have a few allegorical movies I'd like to share, and TV series that I'd like to share right now that I recommend for anyone listening to, you know, go in and check out for yourselves, which is, you know, obviously like Twilight Zone and Outer Limits. Those are just full of allegories. And then Avatar, Cloud Atlas, Interstellar, Equilibrium. We already said that one. Doctor Strange. And if you go to my page on the Cubbyhole website under Nate, you'll see my presentation titled Doctor Strange Decoded, where I gave a pretty thorough breakdown of that film. And so I gave that back in, I think it was Seed 2. Yeah, it was Seed Part 2. So, yeah, I felt like I did a pretty decent job, and I think you'll appreciate it. And the other movie that I highly recommend is Mother. Mother is just so, so, so great. I mean, that is one of the most amazing allegories that I've ever seen. And then we already said Money Pit, and then Star Wars episode 4-9. There's all kinds of allegories going on in there. Lord of the Rings trilogy and the Hobbit trilogy. Beautiful allegories. I mean, if you understand anything about the ancient Egyptian mythos regarding the solar, lunar, and stellar mythos, you'll see some really powerful allegory going on, especially in the Lord of the Rings trilogy. And then King Arthur, any of the King Arthurs, they're all just so important. And I think the allegory that really is just like the Mac Daddy of all allegories is They Live, because, it really helps people understand what it means to see allegorically. And then How to Train Your Dragon trilogy. That was just mind-blowing to me. One of the other ones, a couple more that I have, is The Gods of Egypt.
Yes.
Super, super incredible allegory dealing with Set, the ancient Egyptian god Set, and Horus. Very, very well done. I think that if you're trying to understand Set and Horus, that is a movie you want to study. Also, Aguirre, The Wrath of God, and Apocalypse Now. Both excellent movies that help us understand the journey. So, and Holy Mountain, Holy Mountain is right up there with, with They Live, I would say, as far as allegorical movies that really pull you in and help you recognize how it really is about coming online and, you know, putting the shades on and seeing reality for yourself.
Yeah, it's funny you said Holy Mountain. I had Holy Mountain and Apocalypse Now on my list. Those two are extremely in-depth to break down. But, you know, to go and watch them, they are a must. You know, they're up there with They Live, in my point of view. A couple other ones that I would add is like The Fifth Element. The Fifth Element has a great alchemical and Masonic allegory within it. I think Black Mirror is a great show for people. There is an amazing plethora of knowledge there that relates to current, you know, our current dilemmas in a major way, right? I know that you've got a lot out of that show yourself. Yeah, that show is just, it's mind-boggling. I think Adjustment Bureau is really good.
Oh, yeah.
The movie.
Yep.
I think that's a really, really good movie about free will choice and, you know, determinism versus randomism and a lot of stuff like that. You know, there's a lot of different movies that I would recommend when it comes to, you know, knowing the self a lot better, especially darker movies, right? Because a lot of the darker movies, like Platform, right? Platform is a really dark movie. Most people might not enjoy that movie. I think it's really important for people to watch some of those films, like the movie Mandy. Mandy's really, really good. Has a great allegory in it. Have you seen Mandy yet?
No. I haven't seen it yet.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Mandy is really, really good. The house that Jack built. I don't know if you've heard of that.
No, but I haven't.
Yeah, it's totally Masonic. The whole thing is Masonic. Obviously, Jack being the sun.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's very, very intriguing.
And then the lodge and being the house.
Good. Yeah.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, man, I'm looking forward to that.
But like you said, anything Arthur, definitely watch everything that has to do with King Arthur. You know, King Arthur, the movie from 2004, King Arthur, Legend of the Sword, you know, any King Arthur movie, I would recommend to anybody at any level, honestly.
Right.
So, yeah, another one that I would recommend that's part of the allegory of eugenics, you know, and like whether your genes dominate your overall characteristics. And then it has a really good tie-in with epigenetics within it and shows the importance of epigenetics is Gattaca. That's what it's called. Gattaca. Not Gallica. That's a different one. Gattaca is what it's called. It's so good. It's such a great allegory. Oh, my God. It blew me away when I watched that film. It's about overcoming your genetic deficiencies and how your willpower and your consciousness can rewrite your genome code and what happens when a whole society is built up based upon the idea of, you know, genetic Darwinism and eugenics and social Darwinism, right? And what happens when people are oppressed because of that and what happens with their talents and how do they get through that, you know? So it's really good. It's a really, really good movie.
Well, I'll definitely put that on the list right now. So
yeah, Gattaca, Gattaca is what that is. It's an older movie, I think. Nice. Well, it's not super old, but it's from like 97 or 98 or something.
Sounds like a really important movie if it's talking about eugenics or epigenetics. So
yeah, it got destroyed in the box office too, and by the critics.
Yeah.
You know, any movie that gets destroyed by the critics and stuff.
Yeah,
I'm always like, go watch that movie. There's something in there they don't want you to know about.
Yeah, it was like, I remember when Cloud Atlas and Gods of Egypt came out. And I mean, just it got so much hate. And I watched both of those movies and I was just freaking blown away how amazing they were. But, you know, again, it's if you don't understand the mysteries, if you don't understand the sacred sciences, it's really difficult to see what's going on. But, you know, a lot of people, I mean, I could see that something deep was happening in the Matrix movie. I just couldn't figure it out. And there's people who've watched that and they're like, oh, you know, just like, you know, some dumb weird guy who wakes up, they don't even know what waking up means. And then they just start, you know, bashing the movie because it just, you know, they just don't understand it.
Right.
Or they just don't want to understand it. Or maybe they just really can't feel it from a deep level. I mean, I felt it from a deep level and I was really asleep when I watched it. So, or maybe I wasn't, I don't know. But but we're gonna switch gears. Go ahead.
Well, I would say that, you know, we did have a very unique upbringing with our parents that is very non-average to a certain extent, you know.
Right.
Both of our fathers and, you know, my uncle, your stepdad, are definitely, you know, more rebellious and more out of the programming than most people, obviously. But I do want to add just three more here. I just wanted to add three more before we shift gears. If you're into, you know, dark occult movies and you want to see like some real dark occult stuff, I would say like movies like Suspiria are really good. Another one would be The Devil Rides Out. These are older films.
Oh, yeah.
The Devil Rides Out is 1968. It's really amazing.
Really in your face, too.
Yeah, it's straight up in your face. Like, it's, you know, straight up about Satanism and the dark occult. Suspiria is about ritual sacrifice of the sacred feminine, and the color schemes and the cinematography in that are really, really used very well. And then a more modern one that I think is very important, especially when you're dealing with Masonic allegories, is the Golden Compass.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so the Golden Compass has a lot of stellar mythology and Freemasonic mythology tied into it. So, pretty much same thing, right? But are the same thing, absolutely same thing. But yeah, that movie really blew me away with its story and what I learned from it. So
yeah, same here.
Yeah, when I first watched that movie, I was like, oh, this is just some kid's, you know, movie. And then I went back and watched it again when I had, you know, fully awakened and gained all this knowledge. And I was just blown away, you know, just absolutely blown away with everything that's in that.
Right. Speaking of being blown away, you know, when you're younger, you know, even something you and I have done and a couple of my other friends is bounce off ideas after we watch, you know, movies that are allegorically or series like the Twilight Zone series. And I think that's so important if you have somebody to bounce off your ideas, because when you start talking it out, it, you know, you start to understand it even more. So, or, you know, if you write it down, you know, write out your ideas. You don't have to do it with somebody, but either way, that's really how you start to become, that's how you strengthen your brain to be able to see allegorically, you know, see deeper in the allegories. So I just want to, you know, let people know that is something that you should practice, because not only is it really healthy to be able to see that way, but also it's very interactive with other people, you know, and it gets them thinking too. And, you know, it's a great exercise, and I highly recommend it. And I think that, you know, it's really essential to be able to see all the hidden things that are, you know, veiled from us. So I just wanted to let everyone know that. But also I wanted to switch gears here before we get off. We got about 10 minutes left. So Brandon, what is your theory of what the new Matrix 4 is going to be about? I mean, you know, we can see all the clues, obviously, that they're showing to us in the preview in the trailer, but you know, what do you really think it's going to be about?
Well, I've had a lot of thought on that, considering I'm working on this presentation. You know, I think it's a secular, you know, thing where they're, you know, they're obviously it's called Resurrections, right? So it's resurrecting the entire Matrix. So it's probably going to be a reboot of the Matrix system, right? And we're going to see a lot of similar things that are going to play out just like throughout the last three movies. So we're going to see a lot of homages to that, you know? We're going to see very similar scenes, very similar things take place. And a lot of people might be upset about that, but I think it's going to play into how they're going to develop the, if they do another one after it and a third one after that, if they continue to make it a trilogy, which they probably will, just because I don't think they'll be able to sum up the next cycle of the whole story within one movie. I think we're going to have a very different perspective of the last three, because, you know, that tends to be the thing whenever you have movies like this. They tend to want to shift the idea of it and really throw a curveball into what's already been said, right? So I know that we saw that, you know, Morpheus is coming back as a younger character. So there's a lot of questions behind that. We see that Neo is obviously taking the blue pills and he's reintegrated into the Matrix, and he's obviously in some type of very depressed psychological state to the point where he's trying to kill himself, take his own life, and he's questioning reality. So I think it's going to really dive within that psychological mindset of, you know, what is real and what is not, which is obviously, you know, given within the realm of the Matrix philosophy. But it's going to dive really deep into the psychology of these things more so. I mean, he's taking a pill, the blue pill. It's literally called Ontiflux, I think it's called, which is a combination of two things. It's ontology, which is the study of reality and the nature of the self. You know, it's the study of who we are and how do we know who we are? How can we justify who we are? And it's also the study of how can we justify reality to a certain extent, which has to do with epistemology. So, you know, these are branches of philosophy that they're getting into. So they're going to dabble with metaphysics. They're going to dabble with ontology, epistemology, and logic, right? Those four branches of philosophy. And the other side of that pill name, Ontiflux, flux, it's flux something. I can't remember exactly what it's called, but it's an antiviral or antibacterial medicine, real medicine that people can get. And so it obviously is implied with the pills that he's taking that they're trying to keep him suppressed, which is, you know, given with the color spectrum, they're using blue being passive, and they're trying to keep Matrix, or they're trying to keep Neo in line with the new Matrix system. I mean, there's so many questions we could ask. There's so many things that it could possibly be, because we don't know, like, is he actually in a system that's actually the same as the system where all the slaves are at? You know, has the war rebroken out? Have they broken their truce between the machines and the humans? But I think there's going to be a wonderful allegory about coming out of our own state of ignorance, coming out of a deep depression, right? Because I know that the director, you know, the Wachowski, I can't remember which one it is, but one of the Wachowskis, she just lost her parents, she or he, however you want to do that, but lost her parents. And then, you know, she has said live that, you know, publicly, that this whole movie is going to be, you know, kind of pulling from all that trauma she just went through from the loss of her parents. So there's going to be a lot of stuff that deals with depression, I believe. Lots of stuff that deals with the dark sides of our aspects of our psychology, rather than a lot of technical jargon, you know, which that will be there too. But I think it's going to really get deep into the psychological aspects of being in those systems and things like that. There's so many questions I have. I have a whole list of questions about it. But yeah, I'm super excited for it. Definitely going to watch it. You know, I'm really curious about where they're going to take it. My overall prediction is that you're going to see a lot of the same motifs and you know, structure of like how the film is made, but they're going to twist those things. They're going to add a new flavor to it. They're going to, you know, change it up a bit. You're going to get the scene with Neo and Morpheus fighting, but it's going to go the other way. You know, it's going to be a curveball. It's not going to be Morpheus who has the upper hand through the whole thing. It's going to be Neo who has it, you know, and there's a possibility that Morpheus may even be a program, an agent now. You know, he could be part of the system, and we don't really know that. So, yeah, I think there's a lot of questions that they could answer from the last films. And I'm going to talk about that in my presentation a little bit as well.
Cool.
Which is, you know, these questions that they left open, you know, at the end of the Matrix, right? The end of the third Matrix film. So yeah, I'm excited for it.
Yeah, I mean, if I were, I've only seen the trailer like three times, and this is my theory. I think that Neo, remember when Deus Ex Machina, basically, you know, where Neo was crucified,
yep,
right? I think Neo, like everybody thinks that Neo died.
Right,
and I think
right.
he did. I think he did too. But just like in reality, I think that there's a way to save someone's brain, and I think that, or maybe even their consciousness somehow. And I think that maybe that Deus Ex Machina took all the information of Neo and then reconstructed him into the Matrix. And that's why he's confused, and that's why he's, you know, he doesn't know, like Trinity doesn't know him, but they don't really let you know if Neo knows Trinity. So they kind of make it kind of suggest that he does, but they don't really tell you that he does. But, you know, obviously they become connected, and you can see all through the trailer that they're buddies. So anyway, I think that I think it's also a reflection type of movie. So this is going to be, you know, Neo going through a lot of like not really understanding why he's back in the Matrix, but also he's going to be, you know, I think that's why they're going to have so many motifs from the first one, maybe even the second and third. But I do think that there is something to, I mean, they even show there's like a little blue butterfly. It kind of reminds me of, you know, when like they show the little blue butterfly after he's taken the blue pills. And then, oh, that's the other thing about the pills. The pills before were red and blue, and we never really knew, you know, if Morpheus was telling the truth from the beginning. You know, maybe that blue pill was also the red pill. So you really, I don't know, but because he does start to trip out, right? And yep. After he takes them. So now it's confusing the idea between, you know, your fantasy mindset and your reality truth mindset. So like, it's almost reversing them, because now we've made us as a real society have made the red pill a symbol of truth. But now this movie might reverse that to where maybe the blue means, you know, in this movie, maybe the blue represents the pill of truth. So that'll be really interesting to see how that goes. But anyway, there's this reverse effect, and that the butterfly reminds me of Doctor Strange, when Doctor Strange is having his trip and he sees that butterfly for a second, and you realize, well, whenever you see a butterfly, this is about, you know, the caterpillar transmuting into a butterfly, you know, going through a metamorphosis, right?
Right.
So I think
we also get that lady with the blue hair, and that kind of threw me off, because she seems to be a red pill, you know, a person who is awakened and is fighting the agents, right? But she has the blue hair, so there is a reversal going on there,
right?
And we really don't know who she is, and she's the one who has the white rabbit tattooed on her.
That's true
as well. So yeah, I think you're right with a lot of what you're saying there. But yeah, go ahead. Sorry for interrupting.
No, you're fine. Yeah, I think that, you know, it almost makes me feel like this might be kind of how Black Mirror works, where Black Mirror is always, for the most part that I've noticed, is an allegory where it's something really crazy is happening. It's very almost like, put you on the edge of the seat pretty much the whole show. You're like, where is this going? How is this going to pan out? But then right when you're hoping that there's going to be some kind of hope or some kind of like good thing that happens, they always twist it right at the end where it's just left you with hopelessness.
Yep.
And I feel like because the trilogy was so powerful and Neo sacrificed himself to save people, he's the hero. Now it might be that, you know, they're adding this new, because, you know, this is kind of how the dark occult work. They want to twist everything and kind of ruin the hope in things. And they know how powerful the Matrix was to waking people up. So maybe this movie is about destroying the good that came out of the first three. I don't know.
Maybe they'll make Neo the antagonist, right? The enemy.
Right.
And they'll completely reverse him. And because we know that Trinity died supposedly, right, in the third movie,
right,
when he's going to the source. So her being in that Matrix, it's possible that she's just a representation, a copy, an image of Trinity's consciousness, right?
Right.
A duplicate in a way, or an artificial being in that. And we kind of see that too, because you see Matrix code going down her face in the preview when he touches her. And you know, I was thinking while you were saying that, it just kind of popped in my head, maybe he is so attached to her that he, you know, decides that he wants to stay in there, and he kind of awakens and he starts fighting against the red pills and the machines at the same time. You know, he fights both of them, but
yeah,
that just popped in my head. So
that could be, I mean, you know, yeah, it could be that he is, you know, the machine saved his brain or saved his soul to somehow, you know, put him, because he's a very powerful person, right? So, you know, because he became really powerful and by the third Matrix movie. So maybe they're going to use him to be destructive and destroy, you know, destroy reality, or really destroy Zion. Maybe he'll be a Trojan horse or something.
I had another idea too, that let's say the truce is still going on between the machines and the humans, and then maybe there's a third faction of people who don't want that truce to be going on, and they're seeking Neo to actually, you know, awaken him from, you know, this system of oppression that he's, you know, put in by the machines, right? And they're seeking to awaken him to get him on their side, because the truce is actually a bad thing, you know, and they don't agree with that truce between machines and humans. So
right.
That's a possibility, you know, that there's a whole new faction, which is like in the comics, there's something like that happens where there's the third faction that comes out and they're like, no, like, this shouldn't have been the solution. Like, you know, we need to go the other way. We need to destroy these fuckers. So,
yeah.
But yeah, I know we're out of time here. So yeah. I think it's going to be exciting. And I normally don't go to see movies, but there are two movies this year I'm going to go see. It's Dune and The Matrix, or at least stream them, whatever I can do. If they try to make me wear a mask, obviously I'm not going to go in, but, yeah, I think those two movies are definitely worth watching just to see, you know, what's going on. And obviously I love allegory, so.
Yeah, man, I'm looking forward to watching that with you guys. So I think we're going to go ahead and end it. And Brandon, if you have anything else to say, really thank you for coming back on the show. So
just never give up, you know, truth, love, and freedom. Or with getting your ass off your couch for, you know, get your ass off your couch and do something.
100%.
Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, it's an honor to be back on here, and I can't wait to come back on for some future content, and the presentation, the Matrix presentation I should have out within the next couple weeks. So
awesome.
Be keeping your eyes open and keep a lookout for it.
Cool, man. Yeah, I can't wait to. I'll definitely let people know when it comes out. So, yeah, that's it, guys. So thanks for tuning in today, and we hope you've found some value. And also, more shows, presentations, and news can be found at cubbyhole.com. That's CubbyHole.com. Also, please make sure to keep your eyes out for the next shows where I'll be going further into esoteric Freemasonry. You definitely want to make sure you understand the symbolism regarding esoteric Freemasonry if you really truly want to understand allegory. So if you have any questions regarding the topics for these shows, please email us at cubbyhole@mail.com. That's cubbyhole@mail.com. Also, any donations are always appreciated, as anything that's given goes directly to the Cubbyhole website. Just hit the donation button on the website at the top, and it's set up pretty easy to navigate from there. And thanks so much to those who have donated so far. Okay, I'm your host, Nate Kapp. Thank you for listening, and keep in mind to do no harm, defend truth, and keep transcending dogma.